Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss the third book of Andor, chapters of Andor. We haven't settled on a nomenclature, but that's what we're here to do. My name is Dan Warren, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
So
I have to check if we need to pay royalties.
I'm going to not explain that at all, but yeah, good to be here. It's fun.
Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dan. I'm just going to be nice to you today.
Oh, that's actually more unsettling than cat singing.
I'll just be the same.
Yeah. Podcasts are a form of psychological warfare when you think about it.
That was the original intro for this show.
Yeah.
Yes, we're back to talk about the third triptych of Andor Season 2, which is Episodes 7, 8, and 9, entitled Messenger, Who Are You?
Who are you?
And Welcome to the Rebellion. We've decided to break it up by planet once again, because that seems like the easiest way to talk about the various things that are going on.
Astrogation.
Yeah. Astrogation, which I have some mail about.
Yes,
good.
I saw that.
Is it in favor of me or in favor of you?
I don't think it's in favor of anyone.
Yeah, not all mail breaks down on a binary.
It added an interesting degree of information.
It sounds like a Rogan ad, like astrogation.
Okay. Who wants to cover what? With somebody, where should we start? Should we start with Yavin?
Let's start with Yavin.
I can do Yavin.
Okay. Yavin. Kat, what do you got about Yavin?
Okay.
Yavin it up.
I have feelings about Yavin.
Oh, I'm giving, this is why I tossed this one to you.
So overall, I will state and I explain, in general, I continue to love Andor, and there's a couple things that I loved about these three episodes, particularly like Mon Mothma's flight has been something I've wanted to see since we first knew they were going to be coming in the Gore in this. Yavin is, it's really cool in this. I'll explain what I liked and then I'll explain what the issues are. This was, honestly trying to remember it all. I think a couple things happened, and Yavin's story is like here to show the undercurrent of how the rebellion is evolving. It's less heavy on plot, but I think the key things we learned here is one, we're going to see some old friends. The general who's balding, please give me the name with the redhead.
Draven, I believe.
Draven, thank you.
Yeah. Can we talk about General Draven? So he appears in
I didn't remember the first sentence. But yeah, go for it, Tony. Now I know how this feels like, and I don't like it.
This is what you do to people.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah. I guess you got to sow what you reap what you're sowing. God damn, I hate reaping. Sowing.
Yeah. No, please continue, Tony. You have to finish now.
So we have this guy who's like, the rebellion has evolved to the state of having bureaucracy and paperwork, right? And General Draven is here to make sure that it happens. He's annoyed that clearly Andor is from the earlier paperless rebellion. I like his look, because I think there's something about that actor that looks like he is a background actor from 1970s Star Wars. Yes. Like, there's just something about his face and hair.
You literally think he just walked off the set there to this set.
He just looks like, this was an available British guy.
Well, I think it's a combination of it also kind of reminds me of the entire community is like a little bit of a backpacking community. You see everyone coming to one place. You see them beginning to build a command structure. You see the life in Yavin. I actually kind of wish we spent more time there. And I think the great example of they're now building a bureaucracy or an administration on rules.
You can't wander off. Yeah. You've got to check your guns. You can't stand there. A freighter is about to, there's a lot more. This is not just a Boy Scout camp.
We've moved from a startup to an actual organization that has to be professional. Mm-hmm.
I had to look it up because there's a character that appears who has like one line at the end, and I did not recognize him.
So real quick, just like Seth Gavin. So Gavin is there. Yeah. We're building it up. I think there's also what's going on is there's basically they've relocated one of the huts from Endor, and put it to the side, and that's where Bix lives.
Yeah, there's
we'll talk about Bix.
There's a side Airbnb vacation land over
and
there.
And clearly this is made in California because there are no netting, and like,
yeah,
the bugs
I was like,
must
that thing would be
horrible.
That's a jungle. It would be swarming with bugs.
And where are those monsters again? We've glossed over that. And then there's the story, our friend Val is there, and she's basically taking a step back and clearly still doing the trauma of Cinta being killed. And then we have this really cool force healer. And that's kind of like the Yavin plot lines.
Yeah. There's some, the force healer thing is interesting because we got this far in the show without ever really delving into the Jedi, the force, mysticism. And what I liked about it was the Cassian thinks it's a croc, right? Like, like that fits with that character. He is very skeptic. Yeah. He's very skeptical. He is very jaded about this. He doesn't think that it's, you know, he thinks these people are scammers. He mentions like Marva went to one and didn't, and like, it never helped her. But this one seems legit, right? Like she fixes his shoulder kind of, and she also seems to have like almost a like prophetic
foresight.
Vision about his role as kind of a
messenger.
The messenger specifically, which is interesting because that obviously, well, what that made me think was the word angel, which means messenger. That's the derivation of that. And I think that's kind of what they were implying.
And we, especially in that kind of lines up with one of the conversations with Luthen.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. When Luthen says, you're always when we hear when we need you. I really like the force healer, that she was a cook, I guess one of the line cooks. And then also the fact she even says, like, the healing doesn't always work, but I do what I can. She was a very interesting kind of one-off character that just, again, it really added the sense of like just this almost, again, I say backpack community of just all sorts and walks of people just trying to like get this through and living in this ramshackle environment.
It reminds me a little bit of some of the characters we see in Rogue One.
Yeah.
When, you know, Tony Gilroy is interested in showing Force users that are not Jedi, right? Which is, you know,
cool.
It is, and we appreciate that.
And that's
exist.
Interesting, too, because the context it reminds us is there are people, a lot has been made of the time period between Order 66 and the, you know, the Rebel, you know, A New Hope, where nobody seems to remember Jedi or whatever. But it does remind us there is a huge galaxy in which not everybody ran into Jedi on a daily basis, right? And that some people, you know, may have been far flung in a way that they were skeptical or didn't really believe in these people, especially people who have come of age in the last 15, 18 years at this point.
Also, what does your worldview look like if, say, there's not been free media for a generation, right?
Yeah.
Like,
which is something we will delve into in a little bit.
Yeah. It's the propaganda engine is powerful and buzzing along.
That was we'll talk about that. It was just incredible to see the facts and the reporters blatantly reporting what was not going in front of them. I did want to talk briefly about Bix, because this pissed me off fundamentally, and this is when I walked out of the third episode of this being like, well, I really enjoyed parts of this, but they just didn't know what to do with her. And like, I thought they kind of redeemed that. So like the first three was like, okay, she's dealing with trauma. Okay, we'll see. Oh, you get three episodes to deal with the trauma. We're going to go with her. And then I was excited because I have her sort of taking over the narrative and becoming the aggressor there and killing Gorst. And then she's just on Yavin. They don't even give her a job. They don't even literally say, oh yeah, she's engineer. She's fixing ships. She's doing something. She just sits in this bunker waiting for Cassian to come home. And it is so annoying they do that to the character. And then they have her just leaving and choosing to leave. And like, that's great they gave her that choice, but still it's like, well, I need you to, I'm leaving because I need you to say, it's just such a miss of a character in my mind.
It's
like they
so
just
weird.
And then, and she walks off and then they instantly replace her like, oh great, she's gone. But here's your new friend, this droid. Same shot. Your girlfriend can be replaced by this droid. It's like, what are you guys doing? What are you doing?
It is weird. It almost feels like they had that cabin set and like, we're like, we got to use this.
Yeah.
Because it's like, why are they not, why is she not with the rebellion? Like, you've literally put her in a different physical location. You don't show her like, you know, you could have basically had the same script and had her like, you know, working as a mechanic.
Yeah.
Or there could have been one line where it's like, she is taken on a deadly mission and we may never see her again. And it's like, nope, we have no. I mean, it connects to, and we speculated about, it's like, it seems like, you know, is it the Andor show? It very much feels like the Andor show right now, when some of the more exciting moments did not feel like the Andor show. Because it kind of felt like for Andor's arc and her not being around for Rogue One, she either has to die or she leaves him.
Yeah.
And I was kind of hoping for her sake, like, she would leave him. I was not impressed by the letter where it's like, I'm leaving you for the rebellion. It's like, what about your thoughts and feelings, lady? Like, you know,
I can't do this anymore. Like, and again, just give her a job. Just give her something that she's doing in the background.
Yeah,
it feels a bit. Yeah, I agree. They did punt on having them actually have to have a hard conversation. Yeah. Right. Like that feels like an abrogation of sort of like your responsibility as screenwriters is like, you're just like, that seems like it'd be tough to write. What if we don't do that?
I
like that she lives, right?
That's
because
great. That's
I
good.
Do appreciate
yeah.
that,
could've
she,
been worse.
That she like is trying to make a choice. I agree. It's clumsy. I think one of the things it does remind us is in the first two, as we mentioned, in the first two sets of three, Cassian is like a one among many player. And these arcs really delve in Cassian. And we saw in some ways, we saw more of Bix in the first two sets of three than we did here. So I feel like, fine, you want to refocus on Cassian and have a big arc about him. Great. There's no problem with that. But I agree with you that
they give more to the Force user women than they do to Bix, and Bix is in three episodes.
Yeah, and even there, I think they could have done something like, if this really was about her having almost like a religious awakening or something, but they didn't hit that hard enough. They kind of glanced off it, but they could have.
They could have done so many interesting things with her.
I was very prepared for I can't do this anymore. I have to go do something. I have to I'm going to go start therapy, or anything as opposed to I'm holding you back.
It's a weird choice. It felt like writing to get to an end point, which was we need to have. And I agree
it's
that
weird.
The K2SO thing, the pacing on that was totally wrong.
So awkward.
Totally wrong.
K2SO appears on Gorman and on Yavin. I guess I have a lot of thoughts about, and I want to say these three episodes have some amazing stuff in them, some stuff that's great, some stuff that I think is some of the best Star Wars stuff. And there are a couple of things that are weird, sour notes that I guess mainly stand out because of how great everything else is and how impressed I am with everything else. This is a thing, I had a conversation about K2SO with my viewing partner, where I basically said, I am not interested in K2SO's origin story. I am not interested in the origin story of things. I am not interested in the origin story of hats or whips or anything like that. And then I was accused of thinking of droids as things. And you know what? That accusation was not unfounded.
I did like to see where K2SO. I was interested in where he came from. Where they came from.
I guess
from.
I'm not.
That's fine. I respect that.
I agree with that. Yeah. Although I will say, in sort of pivoting to talk about Gore a bit more, Gorman.
I did want to say one more thing about Yavin 4, but go back.
Gorman, just to say one thing. I really do appreciate that the scenes with K2 prior to that are like a horror movie.
It is serious
Terminator vibes there, and that was it was real scary. I thought it was well done, but
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like it was a little shoved in here in terms of there's this horrible thing and we hit it with a car. And it's like, hey, what if he was our friend?
Yeah, let's take him on. No, the only thing I was going to say, and you guys have heard me say this before, way back in season one of Andor, is I will remind you, I love Rogue One. It is my favorite Star Wars movie. But I'll point out again.
You just love when the good guys lose. That's your favorite thing.
No, they win, but it's questionable. The ground forces, of which there are many of them, there is not a single woman among them, which again raises questions. And so, guys, with the Bix, it's one of those things you could have. It's so easy to get right, and it's
here's, do you think we'll see Bix in the next three episodes?
I don't think so.
I'm unsure. It
not
feels
even like
from
a scene
a
with her
point.
In a cantina watching the news.
I would not be surprised if she does appear briefly. I don't think we'll get a major storyline,
we don't get a story.
I am going to throw something across the room if it turns out the reason she left was she was actually pregnant. I will get so angry if that is the reason why she left.
Now that you've said that, I can't unthink it.
Oh no.
Yeah, we're going to see little Kazgan running around in the background. It's Jesus
Christ. That's so we can get Andor season 3.
Anyways,
the rise of Andor Jr.
Now that you've said that, Kat, I'm
I don't
100%
like
convinced
Kat.
That's gonna happen.
Why are you I don't like when you're so right but also you're angry about it. That's the worst. Oh no, Kat.
Welcome to Dan's life.
Why would you put that evil out in the world?
Do you guys want to talk about Gore or Coruscant? I think we should work towards the best. Coruscant, I thought, was the best, right?
I like the gore stuff, too.
Gore stuff is pretty good, too.
Tony, like let's do gore.
Yeah, let's do gore next, just slightly chronological. We'll end with
Gorman. I guess the gore are the people, but they live on Gorman.
That's what I just said.
I look forward to your Star Wars etymology conversation, like teaching.
I'm just getting it right.
Yeah. So we spent some time on Gorman in episode 7 and episode 8, and then Gorman is talked about in episode 9. And I guess back on Yavin, Willman still alive.
Yeah.
Unclear if I guess he has a mission from Luthen, so he's not permanently on retainer to Saw Gerrera anymore, which is for the best. And he has basically an assassination mission, which he recruits Cassian to go to Gore with him and kill Deirdre, right?
Dedra. I was literally always saying Deirdre, it's Dedra.
Okay, you implanted it in my... Mm-hmm. How could you be wrong?
Remember,
obviously, I learned from you!
They want dead.
But she's alive.
Dedra.
Alivra is someone else.
So they go to Gore. There's a scene where, I don't know... Cassian and Willman seem to have like a weird relationship at this point. I mean, I feel like it's almost a thing where, you know, Cassian is kind of paternalistic to him, mm-hmm. and Willman is now grown up enough that he has no interest in that.
Yeah. It's definitely like an older brother, younger brother vibe, I think.
Yeah.
Like, he sees himself as responsible, right? Because he basically made that guy leave Ferrix.
Yes.
And Willman's also been living with Saw Gerrera, so like I think he also feels like he is an adult and one of the driving forces of this. He's
huffed gasoline. What more is there to growing up? Yeah. Yeah. So episode 8 is basically all on a Gorman, and they really use that plaza set mm-hmm. that they probably spent a zillion dollars on, because the whole episode is just hanging out there, and it's almost like, the episode is just 45 minutes on Gore is on Gorman is what it is, where things are building, and there's these great scenes where we have Cyril going to work, and it's so different than before because now the plaza is all locked down and he has to be like scanned by people and waved through. We get a little bit of that also with Mon Mothma on Coruscant. It's major America post 9/11 vibes of your ability to move around is very different now, and there's checkpoints everywhere, and you're going to be scanned and all kinds of things. But basically, the Empire is, they are instituting kind of their trap, and there's even rumors that they've already landed mining equipment, and they have opened up the plaza that was previously locked down. So all the Gore, like, not even just, I mean, there's revolutionaries in there, but just the people and protesters come and are protesting, and they're singing, and
the singing was very nice. I really like the singing.
That was great, because it felt like it was almost kind of a de-escalation there.
Yes.
And this whole episode is like, we know that this is gonna go badly. Yeah. Right.
Yes. It's super tense.
And we have this, you know, we had speculated about this a little bit, but we have the thing where Cyril figures out what's going on.
I thought was the best part of the entire thought Cyril Karn was the highlight of this. Yeah. His entire thing of confronting Rylands. Rylands then being like, you're an idiot. Here's what's going on. He catches it, confronts Dedra. Love that he is mature enough to walk away from Dedra and didn't just blow up at her. I was really impressed by that. I mean, after choking her. And then like walks out, but doesn't do anything.
He's struggling. This is his defining moment, right? Where he is trying to reconcile his image of himself with what is going on and what he has been party to. And he is coming. And honestly,
He comes undone.
And I think there is the chance that if he does not see Cassian in that moment, that he sides with the Gore,
shot.
Right?
Yeah.
There's the great shot before that.
Where they walk past each other in the crowd.
Oh, I stopped and replayed that. I was like, was that one shot? Yep.
It was one shot. It was really well done. Their fight. And then just the great line of, who are you?
This follows up on what I said last week, which was, would Cassian even know Cyril if he saw him? And the answer is, and that is also, to me, a brilliant scene, because Kyle Soller, full credit to him, that moment where he realizes, I have been obsessed with this guy for so long.
It's a there's a it's there's a parasocial
relationship.
Yeah. There's a wire moment like yes. that too. Where,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Who are, yeah.
yeah. And then he's shot.
And then he's and shot. Then he gets shot in the head by Rylance, who has every yes. reason to shoot him in the head.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
like it's tragic because you feel like that guy almost
he almost got
he
yeah.
almost got it.
Yeah,
he almost yeah. This missed
on his
by
poor
this
mother.
Much.
That last yeah. his poor
that's
mother.
A very sad scene.
I mean, and that is like Cyril figuring out what is going on and what is he going to do. Is actually like more interesting than like Cassian is lurking in the on the sides yeah. of the plaza trying to figure out if he can still pull off his assassination mission.
I don't understand why and he didn't leave because I put like
I didn't
he's
either.
Smart enough to know that this is a trap
yeah.
and it's bad.
I thought
and if
he
you
was
try
like,
to shoot her, you will get murdered.
Yeah. I mean I think he didn't know. And there was the whole thing where he's trying to get in contact with Willman and he can't, and maybe that's where this is where they're supposed to meet.
I think he was staying for Willman. That was like the implied yeah. thing for me of like going back to this father-son or older brother relationship is he feels very protective of Willman and mm-hmm. they showed up together and he wants to get him out of there. But this was a great episode. I think it did a lot of good things. The pacing and the editing felt slightly off, and this is gonna be a really weird thing for me to say because I'm usually the person that's like, this was too violent, this was unnecessary, we didn't need this. And I also really appreciate the fact that like in all this really appreciate there were no children at the plaza. That was like unnecessary angst they didn't need to show. But yeah. I did feel as I was watching this, and maybe it was just me and the mood I was in, just slightly separated from the tragedy of this. I don't know if you guys felt the same way.
I had the opposite.
Okay.
Thing.
No, it may have just been me watching this because I was just like, they kept saying there were thousands of bodies. Like, it looks pretty empty. And it's like, yeah.
I mean, maybe there weren't thousands or they didn't show us that. I think about when the things first happen, right? And they have the setup where they have the Imperial snipers who shoot the
children.
Imperial,
the green,
Imperial
yeah, soldiers,
you know, green
they
group.
Send out there.
And then those guys start firing and just, yeah. I mean, we see a lot of people get shot in Star Wars with laser guns. That's part of Star Wars. But there's something about when they're just shooting those protesters yeah. who, like, at point blank rage that just feels... I don't, and some of it is connections to what we are seeing in our news every day now in terms of how state violence is so available to us like never before.
It is also a fascinating commentary on where the Empire is even in this moment. Because as you pointed out, Kat, when we were watching it and we talked about this, is like there isn't somebody with like a giant blaster machine gun mowing people down. The Empire at this point still feels like it needs to use subterfuge and it needs to massage events. It's not yet at the point where it can just be like, we can blow up a planet because we just really want to. They're like, hey, we need to set this up, have the sniper shoot one of them to provoke this entire reaction, and then we need to lie about it.
Well, they're like, that was the, I was talking about the propaganda too. It's like, I think one of the most chilling ones is like realizing the reporters were in it. When Cyril Karn is walking in, you see the reporter explaining.
And he walks past all the people doing their talking.
And there's someone who literally was saying is like, after negotiations or something of like, and explaining what was behind them, which was clearly not what was going on. And Cyril like looks and like cottons onto it.
Right. And they have the whole talk about the armory and the bombing there and whether or not the outside agitators were involved with the bombing. And like, there's all this stuff set up as, you know, again, excuse for making this happen. And the relationship, especially between Dedra and Cyril, which is at, I think, a big chunk of this episode, is fascinating.
Yes.
Because, you know, talk about Dedra for a moment. She's not entirely on board either. But
no,
she and Cyril are the two ends of the coin, right? Cyril is like, my internal code is more important to me than whatever I feel like the Empire's telling me to do. Yeah. And Dedra's like, I am Imperial through and through. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some great shots of Denise Goff there working with, like, she's like smoothing down the uniform and everything.
Good soldiers follow orders.
Yeah, exactly. But she is.
She loses.
She's indoctrinated, but she is also.
She has like a panic attack.
Yeah. Because she knows exactly what's going to happen. And I think you even see this in that first episode where she talks to Krennic, where she pitches this as the idea. Like, I think she's not even super comfortable with it, like the whole thing with, like, you know, Partagaz sending her out there and she's like, I don't want to do any of this, like, I want to be looking for Luthen, basically,
because
I think he's the problem. I don't want to be setting up a problem that I can fix, like,
and I don't know where she ends up. I feel like the show, I mean, I feel like the show is probably sends her deeper, right? It's like, now that you don't have Cyril, you're
bought in.
Yeah, you're all the way, you know, guess what? You sacrificed the one kind of tether to, you know, normalcy, and now you're just an automaton serving. But it was, I mean, it was in some ways interesting that we did not see her at all in the next episode.
Yeah.
Also on Gorman, I even just love, we have a little bit with the character we've seen before, the hotel.
Yes, he was great.
Who, you know, who had that interesting speech with Andor and clearly recognizes Andor when Andor is back under a different identity and like says like his coworker is going to put in a report tomorrow, like you should be gone by then. And then, you know, and goes from basically I'm going to help you to like he is then there's a quick shot where he helps other people when stuff is going down in the plaza.
Why does he throw the bomb? That's what I didn't understand. Was he just trying to
throw the bomb?
He rolls the bomb to the front.
Throws a grenade.
Is he trying to? I thought he might be trying to, but it's inside the hotel. I wasn't sure if he was trying to do more damage or if he was trying to escape and escape.
I thought he was trying to hurt some of the Imperials soldiers who are outside. Because
there are a bunch of. Yeah.
Yeah. He's part of it. We see him in the cell.
He's absolutely in the resistance. Yeah.
And of course, he says rebellions are built on hope.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And we can remember.
Again. I didn't need an origin story for that either, but I like hearing it.
Who says that in Rogue One?
Does Cassian say it to Jyn first, or does Jyn say it to Cassian?
Cassian says it to Jyn, and then Jyn does Jyn say it to Mon Mothma, or does it get cut out of the... I forget if that's a thing that's in the trailer, or if it's in the...
It in the trailer, but I think that part gets cut out in the movie.
Okay.
We'll have to rewatch Rogue One.
Yeah, people, I think
which is weird, because people love that. Like, it was, like,
a great line.
Shirts with that, and it was like, it is now not in the movie, but, you know, it happens.
It's still a good... It's a good moment for telegraphing where Cassian's trajectory is going.
Especially Cassian, not a guy with a lot of hope.
Really not.
But you can see him. He's. I feel like in the last season, he was becoming a little more of just the tool. And this becomes a little more, I don't know, both harder, but clearly emotionally affected by everything going on and being in the Gore. And that parting shot of him driving away with a tear rolling down. And again, I think, leaving Will, I mean, it's all obviously incredibly awful, but also that personal connection to Willman. And I think interesting to see Willman choosing to stay behind for his friend. Mm-hmm. I forget her name.
Drina,
the one who broadcasts later.
Yeah.
Right. And they're trying to get the word out, right? And that's the moment, I think, where he realizes this is where this is going.
I don't know. I thought the depiction of the massacre was like, you know, really thrilling, you know, it kind of this very intense, this kind of felt like this horror film where, you know, something horrible is going to happen and you have all these people chanting and it's very dramatic. I thought that was well executed. I feel like I saw lots of various people being like, it looks just like an insert one of 25 different, you know, massacres of people or protests or things where things went wrong and, you know, where disproportionate violence was used against relatively peaceful people.
It's interesting,
which,
too, because
we have a lot of to choose from.
I have seen this construction, right? It's like the green soldiers going out into the protest, not really knowing what's going on, and then something happens and somebody makes a bad decision. But what makes it so sinister is, of course, that what something happens is the setup.
And they chose to put green soldiers there on purpose.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought the lead up all the way to the shot was very, very good and very tense. And I don't have a good explanation for it, but I think something of that scene that happened afterwards, and I realize this makes me sound like a callous, horrible person, and that's not my intent. Like, I still was tearing up throughout. I don't know, it was just too long, or purely from an editing and storytelling, long, repetitive, and it just kept hitting the same note, which may have been the choice of just like, this is awful and everyone's just going to keep dying and we're just going to show you everyone keeping to die, but it didn't quite work for me, but I still much enjoyed the episode and the story was telling.
I mean, I thought it did a good job of depicting chaos, right? And it, especially you have this thing where there are resistance fighters in there with guns trying to shoot people. And it's kind of like, are they making this better or worse? It's a massacre. So it's not like it's a fair fight. You also have all the people that are just like caught in the fray of things. There's a little bit where you have the different members of the cell, like trying to find each other. And then like they find each other and then one of them gets killed. Right. And that was a little tricky because it's like, I don't know any of your names yet, guys. Sorry. Like, so, you know, and I think that's the part that kind of I was a little disappointed by is they then have the thing where it's like, unleash the KX droids, right? And the droids start marching out and they're just flinging people. And that is terrifying, but it almost felt like that's from a different movie. Like, that's where we went from historical thing to Terminator.
Well, you have to remember you're in Star Wars, right? Like, I think there's a point there where
Yeah,
I don't disagree with you. I thought it was very effective, but I agree with you that it is kind of a tonal shift. I would say the similar thing about, we meet briefly the character Captain Kaido.
Yeah.
And if you weren't clued in by the giant scar down his face, he is a villain out of central casting, right? Like that guy, we spend so much time with interesting characters like Dedra and Cyril who are complex and nuanced. Mm-hmm. That guy is not nuanced. He is not complex. That guy is a murderer. and that to me is a little less interesting just because there is something to be said about the banality of evil.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think Dedra, especially in season one, is a great example of that. She's just in it for a job up until the mask comes off and we see how much she does like, you know, certain of the getting her hands dirty at times.
Yeah.
Whereas, and even Gorst, right? Even Gorst is a character who, yes, he is evil, but he has that like kind of detached, like scientific, like
he thinks what he's doing is perfectly fine.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Whereas,
sensible with science.
Kaido is just like, I really like killing. Yeah, he's twirling a mustache if he had one. I'll say credit to that actor, Jonjo O'Neill, who I've seen in a couple different things, including my personal favorite. If anybody else has watched the Pennyworth, the Batman prequel show.
I watched
show,
the first couple of it.
Yeah, he plays Aleister Crowley in that. And wow. He is great. He is great as that character.
I did not know Aleister
extremely
Crowley
unsettling.
He also is in Bad Sisters.
He's in Bad Sisters, just a random,
guy.
A hapless husband. Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. He's very, like...
Good range on that guy.
Yeah. And I guess
not
that's
his fault. Just a character that's a little too cardboard for me.
The droids are... It's tricky because it's like... And even, you know, they have the thing where they have the column of security soldiers who are not stormtroopers, I feel like is an intentional thing to show their faces and to show that these are like young green recruits in a way that when they're faceless stormtroopers, But then to go from that to like, we have killer robots, especially when it was like, they're like, the fight is over. Everyone's dying and loose. And it's like,
just,
and now they're killer robots.
This is one of the moments I actually think there is something about that that works for me because what it does demonstrate is the callous nature of, you're telling me instead of sacrificing those guys, you just had droids, right? You don't even care about your own people, right?
No,
like you could have sent the droids out to do crowd control or something if what you really and cared about. But no, what you cared about was sacrificing those the cannon fodder.
And I think they're trying to use the droids, and this is somewhere it didn't quite work to explain, like, because we know the story is the Grand Massacre, and like they're going to go out and basically slaughter a lot of people in the city and then relocate everyone. And I think trying to use the droids to explain essentially how does it grow from the plaza to the city? And I guess what they're trying to show is basically the droids basically then continue to unleash the terror throughout. And again, it doesn't quite tell that story.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel chaotic to me at the end.
Well, there's a bit of working backwards again, as we said. Like, you know, we have to have K2SO, therefore we need to explain where he came from, therefore we need to have a season. Maybe this works great because we're already doing this. Like,
I would have been willing to believe that it's like, this is K2SO. We met one.
We found him once and rebuilt him or whatever. Found him. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe they will do interesting things with him. Cassian and K2SO are going to have lots of heart-to-hearts in the next three episodes. I didn't.
Yeah. They are a fun pair. I think, again, it's a struggle because of the way we got there, I think feels a little contrived.
It was still,
Cat,
it was
good. Cat would not trade Bix for a K2SO is what you're saying. That's not a...
I mean, and this we talked about before, and this is, I think, one of the key issues that I think they mishandled Bix. I think that is fair and totally there.
Yeah.
But, like, the fact that you write off a woman character and pull in a droid, again, inherently not bad. It's just the fact that you always have to be aware of the context of all this writing, and it's like, yeah you did this. This happens a lot. Women are constantly being replaced by droids. I'm a droid.
Left and... interesting. All right, let's move to Coruscant.
This
which
was so
I guess
good.
I will take care
good.
Of.
So good.
How'd you feel about this one, Kat?
I love this.
Episode 9, Welcome to the Rebellion.
Catering.
Is basically all entirely on Coruscant, where...
Did I mention this was really good?
Cassian has shown up basically fresh off Gorman, and he is being recruited by Luthen and Clea to help pull Mon Mothma out. Mon Mothma is going to make a speech denouncing the Emperor. She has roped in Bail Organa, who they're supposed to like do this together and then bail out, no pun intended.
But so good to see them knowing each other and working together in their own selves.
Yeah.
I like that Bail Organa's superpower is like knowing
procedural.
Procedural. Yeah.
She mentions that. She's like, I've seen you pull this off before. You know all the rules. However, Bail doesn't think he can leave. He thinks he basically needs to stay behind he essentially a hostage, like he's
because Leia, right? It's nice they don't talk about it.
He doesn't say that, but it's implied. I like that. That's the point. Even though Mon Mothma also has a daughter who she just, but I'm not on good terms with my daughter, so I can just go.
Where was the husband in any of this?
Parent was
maybe
not
they're
here.
On Chandrilla. It's unclear.
Maybe. I mean, well, I did wonder. So this is 2 years before Battle of Yavin. So, like, I don't know what Leia's role is yet. I don't know if she's read in.
They do have
a great conversation where, because there is a question of like, Bail Organa is here. What does Bail Organa know? Like, what level of circle is he in? And I appreciate that they have a conversation that is not one of those like, listeners, here's how we will explain to you that it's like, no, they just, you have to figure out his level of involvement from the type of conversation he has with
Mon Mothma. He's got a team.
He doesn't know personally. Dan had a whole conversation. Well, sorry. Keep going, Dan.
Yes.
There's also an issue with the offices being bugged. So Erskine has to do a sweep of the office and finds a listening device.
Do you have thoughts about people's various spycraft in this episode? I thought they weren't doing their best spycraft.
No, I think that's kind of the indication of stuff is breaking down a little bit, which is, I think, an interesting...
Because when you find a bug, what should you do? What would a better
spy do? You don't smash it. You definitely don't. You
use it for misinformation.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. That to me is Mon Mothma acting out of anger and frustration. She feels she's a senator.
Clearly.
How dare they could bug my office? But she's not a spy.
Yeah, you can see her. Like, it's clear she's acting out of emotion there.
Yeah.
The walls are closing in on her, which I could understand, therefore, the choice of we don't see her kid, we don't see Perrin. Yeah. Like,
she feels
isolated, alone.
Yeah.
She goes for a walk by herself and, you know, people show up.
Well, that's just an interesting... So she goes outside to practice her speech, as Erskine suggested, and Luthen shows up. Now, I love this because Luthen has dropped the outfit. Yeah. He's just in his, like, usually dealing with Cassian look, where he's got no wig, and he's wearing his, like, dark clothes and everything. And this is the moment where you start to realize these two characters have really come to grate on each other. You know, Luthen, I think, you know, still values her, but knows that she's kind of a liability, and she thinks Luthen is basically a, I don't know, sociopath or something who's just manipulating events.
They aren't on the same page anymore.
Right. And
Luthen are on the same page. Yeah, the two go the whole conversation being Yavin or Coruscant and Luthen. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is, again, this is when the crap hits the fan, things start getting tenser and nobody trusts anybody else. And this is the challenge with the rebellions. So we have Luthen basically telling Mon Mothma, look, you're going to give your speech, you're going to get out of there, you're not going to trust Bail Organa's team, they're compromised, I'm going to send my guy, you have to trust him. And
you can't tell Bail that...
You can't tell Bail his team is compromised, because we don't know.
You were able to figure out, we find out later when we go to, I do want to, at some point I was talking about basically the little NSA headquarters, which was honestly very, very funny and just bureaucratic. There were a lot of good humorous moments in this episode, too. That it's Dan figured out it was Lonnie's agent.
Yes, the team, the infiltrator they refer to as Supervisor Young's agent, and Supervisor Young is Lonnie. He's not there. He's off shift.
Okay.
that one poor guy is not even supposed to be there today.
Yeah, there's the guy who's like, I don't want to be here. Why am I, you know? Why did a senator have to commit treason on my watch?
2 weeks from retirement.
Yeah. We also, I just want, before we forget, I wanted to mention a great bit of the conversation with Luthen and Mon Mothma, where she talks about Tay.
Yeah.
And again, we never get
remember my childhood friend that you killed?
It's
remember?
Like, it's not ringing a bell.
Which one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Why was that so easy for you?
I think about him often, she says. I that moment I just enjoyed as a like callback to that, because that's when the moment where, you know, at first we learned that's basically when Erskine started working for Luthen, and that's the moment where Mon Mothma stops trusting Luthen, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's basically how much of that weekend was Luthen working.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know? That was a busy 3 days.
Yeah.
Sure was.
For Luthen.
So Mon Mothma shows up in the Senate and she gives her big speech and she condemns Palpatine as they try to cut the feeds. But we have an amazing moment where the two workers are like,
we fixed
the lock that was always broken.
Which is like, I so believable.
Those guys, so yeah, believable. I think I love it. I love it. And one of them has the like kind of low body.
Yeah. They give a nod to each other, which makes you think.
Yeah,
this is intentional.
Yeah, yeah. The security codes in the
upstairs. But that one guy who runs all the journalists. It's the best where he's like harried and they finally cut to him like pulling the giant lever to turn everything off.
Yeah,
but it's too late because their speech has gotten out and now Mon Mothma needs to get out of there. Cassian has cover as a journalist and he's gonna help her get out if she trusts him, which is dicey because Cassian, not the best bedside manner.
Yeah,
I do like when she meets him. And it's, you know, it's that thing where we've been watching this show with our characters, mm-hmm. and we spend so much time with them that we sometimes forget that, like,
Andor doesn't know
who Cyril is. Mon Mothma and Andor have never met before, and she brushes him off as a journalist, which is his cover, which I love. And, you know, this is an episode where there's basically, we just saw an episode that was all violence.
Yeah.
And this is an episode with, like, two, like, punctuated
notes of violence. Yeah.
Violence, which are, you know, why do you keep shooting people in front of a senator? Because he shoots two people. But they hit pretty hard, right?
There's some good moments in there. I mean, Kat and I think we're definitely playing one of these three people is going to kill at least one of the others.
The way they showed that group, again, it was like, you got to be watching closely because we have close-ups on their faces.
As they're coming through security.
At first, I got a little lost because there's three effectively unnamed rebel friends. And then there's also Erskine and there's also Andor. So we've got like five people kind of running around in the Senate back hallways arranging things.
And that's one of the reasons I think I loved this. I thought was a great episode because one, we see other characters just being their characters and growing their characters, right? I love seeing Erskine's loyalty to Mon Mothma even after he gets fired and like comes after her to get her out safely. I love Cassian and then just like how much the spycraft of how he shoots the driver, right?
Yes.
Like so well done. But I think what I love about this is so on Gore, we had a lot of people, but many of them were not characters. On Coruscant, we have a lot of people, but everyone's a character. So like the guy running the NSA, the driver who like I literally thought was gonna be listening to the Red Sox game, who's like this stupid ISB agent, was great.
Yep.
Like to see him come back briefly. and even Clay of like everyone, it was such a tight script that they're like there's 10, 15 people, they all have a key role. Maybe they're on screen for 15 seconds, but they play that role and it makes it so good. And like, I know all those characters.
Even the guy on Bale's team, the rebel, whatever he is, who is not an ISP agent, but suddenly looks real.
He's like,
guilty.
I just met these people.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's like Erskine, like, they're rebels and shoots him. It was like, good thing, quick thinking.
Yeah. And in a room full of journalists, I guess.
Yeah,
right. And with also some security. It's, I'm just gonna say it takes a lot. I feel like we've been pretty heavily coded by the prequels to not have any interest in anything involving the Imperial Senate, and they got us on this one.
Yeah, so. I like the moments where with Cassian has to prove like she is very wary of him up until that woman pulls a weapon and is like, this is an ISB arrest, at which point I think, again, full credit, Genevieve O'Reilly is great in this episode, in every part of this episode, I think, but her shock at every time Cassian kills someone in front of her is very believable and very like, oh my God, you just, look at what you did, you just murdered that person.
Well, that's the line, welcome to the rebellion.
Welcome to the rebellion.
So good.
So good.
It's like, it's you're now fighting with us.
I mean, it's a reminder that like, Mon Mothma, who's, I mean, it's that interesting thing of like, who is deepest into the rebellion?
Yeah.
And it's like, Mon Mothma is pretty deep, but she has not had to be present for violence.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And there's an interesting point at one, I think that Luthen and Clea are having a discussion at one point, and they point out that like she really is a liability because if they get her, the whole thing comes down because they'll get Luthen, and if they get Luthen, they have everybody
else. They'll get Yavin.
They'll get Yavin, they'll get Saw, they'll get everybody.
I feel like we get bits of, and it's so great that Clea is much more of a real character in this season. I mean, we had the the conversation between her and Andor where he's like, I'm out after this, and she's like, that doesn't work that way.
Yeah. What do you think that means?
I'm probably gonna have to be the person that kills you if you're gonna keep talking like that. But then there's the conversation where I think we get basically part of a conversation between Clea and Luthen where they're trying to figure stuff out. And it's very interesting because I feel like, you know, her cover is that she works for Luthen, but she doesn't really act like a subordinate in her conversations with him, right? Yeah. I mean, she's
like his right hand man, really. They're like partners. Yeah.
She's got a lot of information. She's not.
She's I also wanted to call out a great scene in the safe house that revisit.
We go there. Yeah.
Which is
you've been here before.
Which is again a nice moments as the different agendas sort of collide and unwind. Wilman's there. He's been injured.
I did question. So Wilman's been shot, and he's been shot on Gore, and so they take him to Coruscant.
Maybe it's
then
on the
Yavin
way to Yavin.
I mean, I think the point is there's nowhere in Gore certainly that he's going to get the medical attention he needs. You can't. Okay. You're limited in terms of where you can go. Probably.
Well, I want so two things on that. One, just the scene of like where Cassian gets coffee, right, and like he just knows and sent out to space. But I also want to talk about a couple thoughts of this is the propaganda of the rebellion and the fact that they're like, Cassian, you can't be the one to take her in. We're going to give her some pomp and circumstance and there's going to be a speech, right? And they mentioned every time there's going to be a speech.
Apparently there's a little bit of a continuity. I don't even know if it's a gap or it's like we had this with the Ahsoka show where there was one shot that we saw in the last episode of Rebels, and then we see it in the Ahsoka show, and they don't the spaceships are different, or it's a different time of day.
There's a little bit here because
there's one episode of Rebels where Mon Mothma's there. She's like the secret cargo that they have to like escort with Gold Squadron, and I think she gives the speech. So there's a little bit of like it's tricky because basically she gives two speeches, right?
What I like about it though is that it even though they're rebellion, they still have to control their narrative of their people. Yes. And after this entire conversation about the truth, it was a very nice jarring point of and it's all about was it in this show
controlling the narrative?
Someone said I think it's actually the guy. It's the general who says it's all about the results. Right. Yeah. Am I making that up or did that happen?
And I don't remember.
I think he said it's all about the results, which is sort of like, whoa, that's the logic that the Empire uses. And in my mind, there's a little bit of like a dissonant chord of, well, is this potentially the reason why the New Republic doesn't succeed? Of there's something about here of those untruths, but also recognizing like rebellions are narratives and stories and you have to do that. And you can't. Yeah. And I think the story here too broadly of casting everyone is you can't. We can't all be Luke Skywalkers.
Yeah, we can't all be idealists. And like it's Luke real Skywalker, politics, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Luke Skywalker really benefits from joining the rebellion four days before the Death Star gets blown up, right? Like that really clears him
that's like you join the company 4 days before it IPOs or something.
Yeah, like that really clears him from any wrongdoing, but because it was like he just wasn't there. Honestly, I have questions about Biggs Darklighter now. And what did he know when?
It makes me wonder in the last three episodes, are we going to see, I presume we're going to be a lot on Yavin, and I'm going to be really interested to see if we essentially see this rebellion. This underbelly of the rebellion trying to recast itself as something good and noble for the convincing the entire galaxy.
That's the challenge. That is exactly the thing that they're... I think that is the central challenge of what they're going to have to deal with at the last three episodes is now that you've assembled it, how do you legitimize it?
Yeah.
And I think, you know what part of that is like, Luthen's not at the table.
No.
I don't think he's going to survive.
Yeah, your rebellion doesn't get to have a spy master.
The only question at this point is how many bodies drop, right?
Yeah,
like,
no.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, next year on Yavin.
Oh, that was great. Yeah. That made me laugh.
Great way
to, I mean, great
line from,
me
a,
laugh.
From a Seder. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody, so. I was going to say, do we have some Jewish people writing this one? Because I felt it. Felt it.
That was good. Yeah, Bail was bittersweet.
I love in the background where everyone's running around trying to figure out what they're doing. We have those little bits of the horrible speeches being given on the
Senate. Oh, yeah. Oh, great. Interestingly, and all aliens,
like, Tony Gilroy is like, yeah, remember aliens? I got them.
I can do the CGI.
Too much.
Here's a Maz Kanata. Here's that guy from Solo. What do you need?
But there was when Bail and the Mon Mothma were talking, I will say all the aliens in the background, there was like two that looked like they were like from Tron.
It was Daft Punk, yeah.
There were some great aliens in the background. I even
that when Cassian was like being pissed off on the landing space, there were two like Jawa sized people in Rebel pilot outfits walking past, and I was like, yeah, they're not all human guys from Tatooine. There's a little bit of diversity in this rebellion.
Yeah,
that's gonna be the last triptych is actually like a sober look at the DEI initiatives of the rebellion.
Yeah,
it's all farm boys.
Going back, one thing I actually realized we didn't talk about earlier, but actually going back to Gore and Luthen sparked this thought of, and again, the rebellion potentially using some of the same text the Empire successful is, I do think it was very interesting, and I didn't really hit upon it, but that both Luthen and the Empire wanted Gore to burn for two different reasons. And I think that again just emphasizes again of there's some very dark undercurrents there, and I'm going to be interested to see how much they go into that in the last triptych.
I think good espionage stories deal with that, like,
at
a certain level, the people who are spies and special operatives and things like that, like, they're maybe not heroes. Like,
They're detached.
Maybe none of them.
Yeah.
Because in order to do that kind of work, you have to be pretty broken.
Unethical, yeah.
And it's, you know,
you got to fundamentally not view people as people. Right, and the second you start viewing them as people, you're compromised.
Yeah. And I guess we see that already, that tension in the first three episodes with Mon and Ty, right? That is the through line in many ways.
But you need to maintain those people, right? Like, that's the whole thing they take with Mon Mothma, is like, you need the people who still understand the empathy of that and can relate to
people. But you have to control them, right? They have to be controlled, otherwise we become the Empire.
Yeah, well, Luthen can't lead the rebellion, even though he perhaps is kind of the most powerful guy in the rebellion now, or maybe not anymore, but he was for a long time.
Yeah,
right?
But I don't think I can't remember if the conversation of he says in a correspond, and is he the one that's supposed to Yavin 4 and that we need an army? I thought that Cassian and Luthen had a fight about Yavin, and if it was, I think I could be remembering this incorrectly, but I think Luthen was annoyed that everyone was gathering and that was creating too much risk. Versus Cassian's like, we have to win this, and therefore this is how we're going to do it. Hmm. But that was, I think, the first episode of the triptych.
One other thing I want to mention, which we have not talked about a lot, but I did want to mention, is the music. This season was not predominantly scored by Nicholas Britell, who did the first season. Unfortunately, due to the strike and production concerns, and also, I believe, he had a personal... They describe it as a personal tragedy. I believe his father passed away, too. So he contributed some music to this season. He is credited both for the themes, and I think in the second triptych, he is co-credited for the music.
Cool.
But he has been largely... Brandon Roberts is the composer who has picked up the slack, and I think has done a really great job. The music is
really good.
I think, you know, if you didn't know, it wasn't Nicholas Britell. Like, it's pretty much of a piece, and I think there's been some great little set pieces, everything from the Gore film to the song on... I mean this is a thing we didn't talk about, by the way, with Gore, was we talked about a little bit, Kat, when we were watching, but contrasting that with Ferrix, which is a very similar scene, but it goes a very different way. But anyways, the music, I wanted to give full credit. I've been listening to the soundtracks as they drop, and they're really good.
You know, again, so much about the show is amazing. It's knocking it out. And we had high hopes for season two, and they're doing pretty good. I'm going to be sad.
One more week.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, in addition to telling an adult Star Wars story with political themes, Tony Gilroy has also done the thing that a lot of other Star Wars people don't always do, which is, like, guess what? You can go somewhere and pick a planet that we've literally never heard of before and build out a story there with a culture and a people there. You know, I mean, Dave Filoni basically tackled Mandalore. He has now done it both with Gorman and Ferrix, right? So, like, that's a thing you can do. You don't have to go to Tatooine again.
You can go back to Yavin. Like, we've never really seen Yavin. I generally am interested in more stories at Yavin.
I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot of planets. You can do a lot of Star Wars stuff that does not have to be on the Star Wars places we've been before, which is apparently something that just a lot of Star Wars people have not internalized.
There's even Dantooine. We haven't seen Dantooine. Yeah,
and we never
will. I just call it my Tooine.
And the costume is also phenomenal. The music is nice. There's a couple of very nice romantic pieces, I forget, at some point.
I'm oblivious to the music because I'm a bad person, but thank you for validating that it's good.
Yeah, and then
cultured viewers. Yeah.
No, it's other than Bex, I've been very it's Andor. I'm three more episodes. I did like too, and I think we talked about this in one of the interviews with Tony Gilroy, talking about it by telling, and again, I was super disbelieving of this method of doing three stories in a row and then doing a year jump. I was like, that will never work. It works really, really nicely, and I think it lets them be very efficient with their time and their character building, and it lets them tell fun stories because they can. They don't have to. They can just jump ahead of a year. They don't have to be artificial and things. But I think he's also said that this creates space for people to tell stories in between, which I really like as well.
I like it and I don't like it. They work great as little chapters, and like the idea that we are jumping ahead in the year, and there's stuff that is gonna, obviously, for example, here we saw like a lot changed on Gore and Gorman in 1 year, and that was cool and neat. And we're intelligent viewers, we can fill in the dots on things. That's fine. They don't need to do that for us all the time. It is tricky where it's like, this is Andor month, and it's like, why not Andor 12 weeks? But I get it.
12 days of Andor. All right. We got some mail.
Listener mail? Ooh. And how can they write to us?
Well, you can write to us in one of many ways. You can find us on BlueSky at acp.theincomparable.com, on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights, and via email at acp@theincomparable.com.
Or just find us in real life.
You can track us down. You can hand us a taxidermied spider.
I don't want that.
I still think they're toy spiders. I don't think they're taxidermy spiders.
I was going to suggest throwing a brick through my window, and I would rather get a brick through my window than a taxidermy spider.
What about that taxidermy can be spider through the window?
That is the worst of all worlds. Way to find something worse than what I just said, Dan.
Really. All right. Some of these things, as always, are a little out of date.
Because they said in the past?
No, I mean also because three episodes is a lot to get through, and people are like, you have a prediction. It's like an entire movie has happened since the last time we talked.
Yeah, sorry.
Chad wrote in, thanks for the...
Hi, Chad.
On Cyril's lawful neutral position with regards to Dedra and Partygas, which autocorrect changed to Party Gas, which I also like.
That was his frat name.
I'm assuming that. He might have just guessed, but it's still great. Chad, if you did that on purpose... Hold on. I noted to a friend that he is the only one, he being Cyril, I believe, without a British accent. I say we will see him turn and leave everything, including his mom, behind. Future air traffic controller on Yavin?
Would have loved it. I also we didn't talk about, he's the only one who goes local with the clothing also on Gore, which is nice. And then also several times in conversations, he mentions local places by name. Which again, just further adding to the quote unquote going native.
He's assimilated.
They don't even nearly let him into the building because they don't think he's Imperial.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I kind of wanted to know who the two people with his mom were watching the news feed.
They're like her friends. Like that is like classic. It's like Golden Girls. Come on.
Do you believe that that character has friends?
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're 100%. Like a caddy group that sits around and mocks all the other people.
Friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I think
they
that mother has
about
a
their adult children.
Lot of friends.
Okay.
None
I did
of whom
not think
I want
she got
to
out.
Meet.
Okay. I didn't think she got out much. But
She's the type of every Sunday just calls lots of people. Rip Cyril Karn. Was hoping you'd live on.
This is where Edie Karn becomes radicalized and joins the rebellion. She's the new face of the rebellion. I actually think we'll see maybe a scene between her and Dedra in the last three somewhere.
That'll be nice.
It'll be interesting because there's some baggage there.
But she doesn't know. She thinks they broke up. She doesn't know that Dedra was on there.
Yeah. No, but still, I still feel like maybe there's some tension there. We'll see. Maybe. Will Dedra feel guilty?
I think Lonnie's going to kill Dedra.
No, I don't think Lonnie could be. I think Lonnie's gonna be real.
My money's on Lonnie killing Dedra.
Like he trips over a statue. What is he?
Yeah, I think you guys underrate Lonnie.
Yep, sure.
I think Lonnie underrates Lonnie.
I think Lonnie is on the chopping block.
No,
I just think every time he says intelligence officer, he probably says it awkwardly.
Intelligence officer?
Yeah,
I am.
We've seen him manipulating. He does well. You guys, yeah. Anyways, keep going, Dan.
He's very nervous.
He's on borrowed time.
A few people pointed this out, and I think, Tony, you sent it along too, but it was sent in to us on Blue Sky by Kit, the post about the pigeons on Gorman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rosemary Mosco, who is a bird enthusiast expert.
She has a lot of illustrations, and there's a lot of, she's responsible for some important bird memes, people.
Sorry, important bird memes.
She wrote and illustrated a book that is in our house about pigeons. And she confirmed that
they are real pigeons, not CGI. They belong to a group of breeds called pouters or croppers.
Yeah. Those that we are referring to. The pigeons that you see on the cafe table in Gorman.
So like the sheep, just using real animals.
Yeah.
The goats.
They glued an extra horn on a pigeon.
But they didn't glue. It's
really hard to do that.
Yeah, no, they didn't. They didn't.
So the answer we learned is just European animals are funny looking to Americans.
That's the one.
Yeah.
We only have one type of pigeon, basically. It's just the rock dove. Fun fact.
Illustrate wrote in on Mastodon to say Star Wars fan pages can be full of the weirdest theories and ideas, but this one made me lol. And it's somebody posting, I think on Facebook, what if Luthen is Uncle Harlow?
Some of these feel procedurally generated.
I like that one.
I also just like the screenshot of Stellan Skarsgård looking smug as heck.
Yeah. I like the idea of Cyril Karn and him just having, you know, Sunday dinner.
We've never seen them in the same place.
It's true.
Illustrate also says congrats on episode 100. Sigrona.
Sigrona Tima.
Aaron writes in, investiture is very interesting as an astrogation problem.
Wait, what?
I think that's just trolling you, Kat.
That is trolling you, yes.
Hey. Remember when you asked, was the mention about astrogation pro or anti you?
Oh, there's another one, though, but I haven't been able to find it.
Investiture was... one of you didn't believe investiture was a real word. That was Dan.
That was probably me.
No, it wasn't. I definitely know that's a word.
Was it Tony?
I definitely don't.
Okay, it was Tony then. I knew that was a word. It was Tony who questioned it.
I'm still uncertain.
So this is a troll of several of us, not just me. I am not being personally targeted by someone mean on Blue Sky.
Well
that was,
done.
That was Mastodon.
On Mastodon.
Well done. You got us all, except Dan, who's doing great.
who
will come for Dan?
Words. And the very interesting as an astrogation problem is, I believe, a Skeleton Crew episode title.
Nice.
I had another one about astrogation, but I'll have to keep flipping. Let me keep flipping through the mail to see if I can find it. Okay.
I really like it when Dan reads his email on the air. It's really fun. It's great comedy.
Sorry. It's our email, first of all.
I don't have access to it.
This is Chris writing.
Are you censoring it?
I take it back. This is not... We read Chris's last time.
Email have you censored?
Please stop.
That's so late.
David wrote in.
The galaxy is watching.
Andor episode 6 was so good. Calibrate your enthusiasm. Sorry for writing again, but I just finished 5 and 6, and they were so good. When Clea couldn't get the device unscrewed from the art, I could feel the tension in my own hand. Ugh. And then just as I realized, we never saw Cassian and Bix at the party. What was their mission? Evil space doctor comes up the elevator with Bix in the shadowy corner behind him. So cool. My question for you is, what do you think Dedra's plan is for Cyril? I thought at first he was bait, then an Asian provocateur, and he clearly thinks he's the ISB version of 007 Jr. Busting the Gorman front for stealing weapons doesn't seem grand enough for what Dedra and Krennic were discussing. I expected a twisty operation to get the Space French to destroy the armory. The Empire could then retaliate as an excuse to lock down and strip mine the planet, which makes me worry in the conspiracy compactor about Cyril. The best way to be sure that the Gorman get fully hung out to dry is if Cyril, the agent provocateur, isn't alive to substantiate any rebel claims. And how much could it enhance Dedra's career, which were she the one who pulls the trigger, sacrificing her boyfriend for the good of the Empire? Bleak! I love it. Food Science Dave, happy centennial podcast. Crazy gas huffing Saw Gerrera, love it.
Thanks, Dave. I think largely where we ended up. I do think, what was he say? I was definitely confused, and I was glad they explained it a little more about what Cyril's mission was. And I think where I landed is, I think Cyril was there to find the outside instigators and then basically capture them. But he never did, and that wasn't really the main goal. Is that what you guys took away from it too?
Yeah.
So it wasn't explicit.
He's there to kind of facilitate, even finding the outside agitators isn't really his job. His job is to support the Gorman front enough that they could be a viable, plausible threat.
He thinks he's there to save Gorman. He's not.
Right. Yeah. come back best this one in a minute. Adrian wrote,
hi, Adrian.
Do you hear the people sing? Is it just me that couldn't get, do you hear the people sing out of my head during the first half of Who Are You? Is that, I don't actually know that reference. Is that,
it's Les Mis.
I was going to say, I thought it was Les Mis because I haven't seen
French
it.
Yeah, this, Dan.
It does have strong Les Mis overtones for sure.
Well, they're all French. The actors.
They're gorish, Dan.
Yeah.
They're just gore.
They're just
it's
gore.
In the song.
We are the gore.
From
the valley to the fields.
Yeah.
Something. Jay writes in.
Hi, Jay.
For some reason, I thought there were only 9 episodes this season, and although I said I was sad it was going to finish this week, I was looking forward to finally getting to rewatch Rogue One, as I've been holding off doing so since before Andor season one. Even your jokes about anti-penultimate last week went by me. Thankfully, I was wrong. There's another week of this.
A lot of people screen out, Dan.
It's fair. But thankfully, I was wrong. There's another week of this amazing show still to go. I gush here about how amazing these 3 episodes were, but I'm sure you've already done it. And so too have and any other letters you've had this week. So just an anecdote. Another geek podcast I listened to was also talking about Andor last week. One of the presenters is a major Star Wars geek. I think he'd even give Dan and Tony a run for your money.
But not me.
No one compares to you, I think, is what Jay is writing.
But I was like, what was their name again? Who are they? What is this planet?
Anyway, he said he's sad this will be the last truly great Star Wars show or movie we get to see for a while, because he doesn't think they can consistently put together the right combination of writers, actors, plot event, and avoid intervention from the studio management who think they know best. I'm hoping he's wrong and the success of Andor convinces Disney execs they need to allow these projects the time and the development stages to flourish instead of rushing them into production and then wondering everyone complains they're poorly written. Another point he made is he knows someone who got to see the entire season early, and his review was, first 3 are okay, but a slow build. Second 3 are really good, but the last 6 have some of the greatest moments in Star Wars ever, and so far I quite agree, so next week should be something special. I'm sure you'll discuss in the podcast, you feel Cyril was having his redemption moment there, was just in the process of realizing the Empire's true nature and not the ideal he previously seen it as. I was convinced he was about to pick up a gun and start capping stormtroopers, and then he saw Cassian, and... Oh, and yay for K2SO appearance. Every franchise needs more Alan Tudyk in it. Anyway, I'm sure you've already covered these points. Anything else I'd have to say about it, so I won't repeat you.
I did just look at the release schedule for upcoming Star Wars stuff.
And it's kind of bleak.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's going to be a while.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fortunately,
speaking of which,
there are many episodes of Moonlighting.
Joel writes in.
Hey, Joel.
To say, hey, ACP team.
So not
first time caller, long time listener.
You guys just ignore me.
Fine. I did. I'm reading. It takes longer to get the messages. Loved all of Andor like any sane person would. To keep the conversation going, I believe that Rebels Season 3, Episode 18 continues the story. You are then hereby requested and required to do further episodes on this Rebel ep along with Rogue One, please and thank you.
It would be a good Rebels episode to do.
And Rogue One. I do think I would really like to rewatch Rogue One after this. So
we
I think we'll probably do an episode on that.
It's too bad you're
Damn
not
it.
Allowed to. Why do you sign these contracts, Dan?
I don't know. Matthew writes, thanks for the shout-out during the first Andor episode. Can't wait for the Cadbury Cream Spiders t-shirt. Great job with the transcription, Siri. Siri transcribed it as and/or.
Wait, Cadbury... this I don't...
Cadbury Cream Spiders.
We talked about whether the...
Oh, that's
the candy,
right. The candy spiders. Yeah.
Yeah, I block out most of our spider talk.
And Will wrote, hello, Rebels.
Hey, Will.
In the recent episode, you were discussing the complexities of watching a trio of longer episodes each week, and I felt sympathy for you all. My wife and I have 2 daughters, a 5-year-old and a 10-month-old. We also have busy jobs that require rest. Further, I'm a hockey fan with a team in the playoffs. I'd love to hear how Dan and Kat consume these. Is it more than 1 episode in a sitting? Do you just lose the sleep of it on release nights? For Tony, does his partner watch with him? We just finished episode 7 on release night, and while I'm chopping at the bit for another episode, it's late, and my partner now just wants to chill with the last evening. Secondly, from the parenting angle, I got our eldest to watch some of A New Hope with me on May 4th, and now she has all these questions about Leia and the world of Star Wars. When do Dan and Kat plan to let their kid watch it? Our kiddo got a little scared, but also loved it. We pivoted from it to watching Young Jedi, so I'd love some bonus coverage for that. Maybe you could do a bonus parenting and Star Wars episode talking about it. Sagrona, listener Will.
Sagrona Tima!
P.S. I have an ulterior motive to get my 5-year-old to watch so that our upcoming December Disney trip will be more magical with Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah.
Do they have Star Wars at Disney?
Just a little bit. Just a tad. So you can have a little Star Wars as a treat.
It's so much fun. It is okay. So much fun.
Galaxy's Edge is great. It is great.
Okay. Okay. Must be nice.
Yeah, good questions. So our son is nearly 3. He started occasionally Young Jedi Avenger. I don't know. He seems pretty good with scary movies. Like, we just actually watched Moana today, and he thought it was the funniest thing ever when the fire monster was, like, hurling lava at them.
I just like that that's the frame of reference. I mean, it makes sense because he's 3, but Moana wouldn't have been on my top 10 list of scary movies. Also, I was a little bit from frame of reference, Kat, because you were shown many horrifying movies at a very young age.
Yeah.
Apparently, you're not going to replicate that down to the next generation.
No, I think I'll be a little more circumspect. Also, I think
you're
going
to wait until he's like 8 to show him like All the President's Men or something.
That's not scary. That's just educational.
It's a great movie. Yeah, well, we'll see. He seems pretty good with it. And he does, we mentioned last episode, he does want to watch Star Wars because his dad likes Star Wars. Do you watch with we typically do 2 one night, 1 the other night, and we just give up on sleep. That's currently how we manage it.
We watch one. We don't consume a ton of TV. We watch like 1 TV thing a night when we have dinner. And this month has been, you know, our thing. And it has been the challenging thing of when Andor gets released and when we need to podcast about it, is that we need to watch it 3 nights in a row, which is, you know, like, I don't dislike it, but it does feel like you can't miss a night or we will fall behind. I also, for people that don't know, Dan was on Jeopardy this week. And I figured out how to watch live television on my TV by paying for another app. And
I found a way around that, by the way. That's legal.
Well, okay. Whatever. You tell me now.
I only found out about it like last night.
But Jeopardy in the Boston area airs at 7:30, which is by when I would normally be eating dinner and watching TV, roughly in the middle of an episode of Andor. So we sometimes watch half an episode of Andor, watch Jeopardy with Dan, and then watch the other half of an episode of Andor.
There is no other television show that pairs better with Andor than Jeopardy.
Except maybe Taskmaster.
Or Wheel of Fortune.
And then there were... I did watch the last 2 minutes of Wheel of Fortune twice this week. Also, we started slightly earlier to watch Jeopardy today. But usually we watch it at 7 o'clock. My partner is very well versed in a lot of the expanded universe stuff, which comes up especially with animated things when we talk about... the Tales from the Underworld. There will be some things to talk about there with those characters, because I'm always like, when was the last time we saw this person? So Star Wars. We do a lot of, I'm assuming, Dan and Kat, you do this too, or maybe Dan just has it all ready to go. We do a decent amount of pausing and being like, when was the last time we saw this person? Who's this guy? Which one is that again? Especially if it's like, I can remember a character episode to episode, but if it's like, this is the first time we've seen someone live action that's been animated or something like that, I don't always make that connection at all.
So we do that a lot in some shows. We don't do that a lot in this show because Dan usually has it off at the tip of his fingers. But what we do and what will eventually lead to our divorce is I don't like watching
with subtitles. Good to know where you're headed.
Yeah, no, this is one of the top 3 most irritating things that I do for Dan. Hands down. Would you agree with that, dear?
This feels like a trap.
Anyways,
did you just open up the plaza? Is that
I don't like subtitles. Captions. Or I don't like subtitles on anything I need to focus on.
You hate accessibility.
No. I love they're great. Hang on. they're great, and there are some shows I'll watch them on, but especially for a show like this where I really want to focus on the acting, I find them very distracting, and so I don't, especially where they are on the screen.
I live by them in part. I think I'm unclear, and I feel like there's not a canonical answer to this. Is it people are bad at mixing sound?
It is. Some of it is. When you don't have to go through movies, you don't have to meet the same standards. There's a whole bunch of articles about this. That is definitely true, and it is definitely
harder.
Also,
I'm getting old, and I don't like that.
They're not mutually exclusive, is the thing.
No, okay. And so there's other things. I like subtitles. But the challenge is, like, especially for this one, talking about political theater, and it's made up names. I'm always like, oh, what do they say? And the Disney app doesn't have the go back and then it plays the subtitles, which like Amazon Prime has, which is great because that's why I'm going back 10 seconds It's not to watch the scene again. It's to put on the subtitles. So I'll pause, put on the subtitles, reverse, replay the scene, invariably screw something up so I have to do it again, exit out of the app by accident, return it to the app, and then watch
sometimes
the scene.
We will get through an entire scene and she's like, I need to watch the last minute over again with subtitles, and I'm like, I'm going to murder you.
And then so I'll pause and turn
I'm
off
still
the
confused.
Subtitles and then
I
we
would
can
just
keep
watch
watching
with the subtitles on. That's
yeah,
my
Kat, I'm confused because I don't, you told me that whole story and it sounds really hard for you, and I'm sorry, but also I don't understand what you actually want.
She wants the ability to jump back and then have the subtitles just for the 10 seconds she has jumped back for, which a lot of the other apps do.
Which
that is a standard feature
So you want subtitles sometimes.
I want subtitles on demand because the subtitles, you have to sometimes press like 8 buttons to get them. And like,
the
it has
app
to be
is really bad with subtitles.
It has to be one of the most common things people are looking for.
As somebody who watches
subtitles. I don't want to like, that's often the first choice is obviously something I don't want the aspect ratio. How often I change the aspect ratio? It's absurd.
I will say, as somebody who watches with subtitles all the time, the Disney app seems to suffer the most in terms of the subtitles just vanish for me at times and they come back.
So yeah, I want to build one button to go back. I love where you go back 10 seconds and it puts on the subtitles.
What if you had special glasses that you could turn on and off that showed you subtitles?
I still need to go back. I like the feature that every other app has.
Again, and they should just use the standard player. This is quickly devolving into one of my Apple podcasts. I'm not going to do that. I do want to throw in one last. This is not a mail that was directly addressed to us, but it was in our thread on the Discord, on the Incomparable Member Discord. If you're a subscriber, you can go look there.
Wait, you're saying it wasn't directly? So we're just like snooping on people now?
No, it was in our thread. So it wasn't like sent into us as
thread.
Mail, but it was on the thread for episode 100.
Did they address it to us?
Well, you could say that because Mark...
How long is this? And has my preamble exceeded the
Mark writes in to say,
time?
Heinlein Space Cadet, which was written in 1948, is here to remind you that astrogation was in use long before Star Wars. And he sent in a picture of a page, which includes...
Of a page?
Okay, from Heinlein?
Yeah.
Oh, only one of the masters of science fiction of the 20th century.
Doesn't he get really weird, though?
Oh, yeah, he does.
They all do. I mean,
they all do. Yeah.
Kat, drugs were plentiful. All right. If you weren't weird, you weren't there.
Unless F. Scott Fitzgerald used it, it's not a real word.
If he had gotten
I thought you were talking about narcotics.
Which he definitely used.
Yeah.
Thank you for writing in. It makes me feel a little better, I'll admit, that it is not just a made-up word from Star Wars.
That's 75 years old, roughly. That's pretty good.
Dan, would you read Scott Fitzgerald Star Wars short story? Okay. Just
I don't know checking. If I'd like it, but I'd read it.
Okay.
Yeah,
which
what would be a good? I was like, what can you come up with a good title for an Scott Fitzgerald Star Wars?
I mean, if you hadn't already used The Great Gatsby, that definitely feels like it could be a Star Wars character.
Oh, I'm getting him and Hemingway. I was like, the sound, and I'm like, that's Hemingway.
Yeah. What's the other one? Tender is the Night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know my F. Scott Fitzgerald very well.
But you went to school for F. Scott Fitzgerald. Never mind.
No. I think that brings us to the end this week. As a reminder, send in those letters. One set of Andor episodes left to go, and then we are, I don't know what we're doing. We're on a hiatus for an indefinite future.
Whoa. I mean, Star Wars might go away, but we're always here. And also, we might talk about Tales from the Underworld and Rogue One.
We are going to talk about a few other things.
If we finally got it scheduled, we better do it.
Yeah, so again, if you are looking for our coverage of Tales of the Underworld, it will be out in the bootleg.
Yeah, don't promise anything. We haven't recorded it yet, dude.
We haven't recorded yet, but the plan is to release it on the bootleg for members, and then we will release the full version after the last set of Andor episodes. So...
And then we'll probably do Rogue One, and then there's a request for a Rebels episode. I just want to go back and rewatch Rebels anyway.
Well, we'll see what
happens. Also, we were asked to watch a Kurosawa movie. So
fun
never stops. Free us.
We could watch like an entire, like anything that's inspired Star Wars.
I think we'll be here a while. I don't really want to watch Metropolis.
Yeah, you want to watch a lot of like Flash Gordon or something?
Flash Gordon.
Do you like Flash Gordon or do you like the idea?
No,
of Flash
I actually have never seen much Flash Gordon, but I do love Gene Autry, the singing cowboy, has an amazing 6-part series that involves like robots in the underground.
You literally know we covered this. I've told you multiple times. We did years ago, we did an MST3K of an episode of that.
It's a really, I was like, not ironically, one of my favorite shows.
Robot Cowboy. Robot coming Cowboy. Through. I gotta so get good. The cardboard
Cat,
oil.
Cat still, that is still deep hasn't in actually the, heard you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. So. It's deep in the incomparable lore.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
It's a show. We'll all agree. Thank you, everybody out there, for your support. We really appreciate it. Once again, you can go to theincomparable.com/members, sign up to support the show, which also, I think, encourages us to talk about more weird and or random stuff. And or, you say?
But yes.
But we will be back with some more, with obviously the coverage of the last three episodes of Andor next week. So stay tuned for that. And I would like to thank my co-host, as always, Kat Benish. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's been fun.
And Tony Sindelar, always a pleasure.
Next year. Yeah.
Thank you once again, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you next week. But until then, may the Force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.